Blog Talk Radio.
As we examine the challenges we face and develop solutions that restore peace and harmony, we are global transformers, changing the world from the way it is to the way it should be. We are one. Wherever we live on this earth, we are one human family. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to extend a greeting to all the members of our family, whenever and wherever you may be listening around the world. To our family in China, Ni Hao. In India, Namaste. In Japan, Konnichiwa. In Korea, Annyeonghaseyo. In Russia, Zdravstvuyte. In Germany, Guten Tag. In Poland, Dzień dobry. In France, Bonjour. In Spain, Hola. In Italy, Ciao. In Egypt, Ahlan wa sahlan. In Ghana, Akwaba. In Nigeria, Peleo. In South Africa, Saobona. In Senegal, Nangade. In Kenya, Jambo. In Israel, Shalom. In Pakistan, Afghanistan, Palestine, and Saudi Arabia, Assalamu alaikum. Greetings, and may peace be upon you all. Join us live on the on-air radio network. Call 727-731-5192. We want to talk to you.
We do want to talk to you. We want to talk to you today. Because this is a time for us to heal. It's a time for us to acknowledge that we need healing. We're excited because in July of 2024, the New Earth Homeschool Academy Online will introduce its first online class, Parenting with Peace. This course, highly advised for young, soon-to-be parents, first-time parents, older parents, and grandparents, will likely challenge many long-time beliefs about how to raise children. Today, we'll hear a few words from three Black moms on building a child's self-esteem and realizing when you or your child has been traumatized and needs therapy and not punishment. The New Earth Homeschool Academy is something, one of those pandemic motivated enterprises that intends to address those things that we understand should be a part of the educational process, but have not been. This week, we've talked about a lot of things that should be addressed in our culture. We have talked about, of course, our Monday morning mindfulness host, Zelda Speaks, had a very powerful guest on that brought to light the manner in which our children learned about sexuality. And recognizing this, we also realize that much of what our children have learned comes from the very dysfunctional household environment in which they lived. We can only teach our children what we know. And when we have been raised in an environment of emotional abuse, then that is what we pass on unknowingly. The New Earth Homeschool Academy Online is a 12-lesson course. You all the way from pre-birth of the child, before you're even conceiving a child, to the mental, physical, and emotional, and above all, spiritual preparation you need to have as a soul that is about to guide another soul through this physical earth experience. We are wounded as women, deeply wounded. We have for centuries been treated sometimes as property, sometimes as possessions of the males in our lives, often repressed, repressed, and oppressed. But we can't see ourselves as victims because we are the ones that bring forth life. And we have an opportunity to shape that life by what we demonstrate in the home environment in which our children are raised. We talked about the influence of the school system and perhaps how it is distorting our children's understanding about relationships and intimacy. And many people are uncomfortable at best and enraged at worst that the teaching of this very is being guided by people who don't appear to have a deeper understanding of the spirituality of sexuality. And so our children begin to use this stimulation of their bodies as a drug to overcome emotional pain. That's what is happening. The question is not how do we punish children for behaving in a way that we find inappropriate, but why are the children in pain? It's a pain that we caused them. They didn't come here hurt. They came here and got hurt by the way we treated them. And we treat them that way because we were treated that way. And we keep believing that this is the way you treat another human being. The New Earth Homeschool Academy Online is designed to change the way we function as a human family. That means removing misteachings, misunderstandings, misdirections that has continued just out of tradition. Well, this is how my parents did it. This is how their parents did it. And look how messed up we are. So if we don't want to create another messed up generation of self-hating, hurtful people, we have to stop the self-hate and the hurt of ourselves. So in the first introductory course in the New Earth Homeschool Academy course entitled Parenting with Peace is first a self-reflection. And this gives us an opportunity to really reflect on things that have shaped our own self-image and our beliefs about ourselves and others that are harmful, that we need to eradicate before we're equipped to guide a soul to that higher level of consciousness in which they must reach in order for us to create a new society here at this time. The souls that have come through us are here to create the new society, the new earth, the new world. One that reflects a higher consciousness based on love. So what are we really creating in the world in which we live? Are we creating a world where people can live together in peace? Or are we creating a world in which people learn to hurt each other, believing that they're in competition with each other, and they must step on another in order to raise themselves up higher? That's been the philosophy, but that's incorrect. And we're experiencing the consequences of an incorrect belief system. And we have the power to change it. But we have to change what we teach our children. And in order to do that, we have to change what's inside of us, because you can only get what you have. Our goal with this course, Parenting with Peace, is to prepare a new mind that is going to raise children differently. Most of us were raised by parents that used the tactic of fear in order to obey. We were taught to fear punishment. And that was the incentive behind our complicity to their demands. If you don't do what I say, I'm going to beat you. That was the way our parents learned how to parent. Obedience or we'll beat you. And this is not unique to African-American culture, but is possibly more intense because of the very distorted, destructive environment created in the founding of this nation using slave labor to accelerate its economic growth. We were an economic policy that brought out the savagery in others. And so we have to unlearn that, because we've been self-inflicting pain and oppression. But it isn't just the African Americans that suffer with this kind of denigrating treatment of children. There are other cultures. Globally, there is a disrespect for life. Sometimes it's reinforced in our religious teaching, and sometimes it's part of a political system. Sometimes it's interwoven in an economic system. Sometimes it's just about long-standing cultural traditions. But it's time to stop. Many people looked at the eclipse the other day and they said, this is a sign from God. Well, you know, we have had predictions from people who foresee what's going to happen. We have an opportunity to create a great new future, because the future is not a fixed thing. There are many different options, and with every decision, we create a different outcome. So our goal with the Parenting with Peace class presented on the New Earth Homeschool Academy online, launching this July, is to help parents, did not have an example of the kind of wisdom that would have enabled them to grow and flourish without personality distortions based on fear, to learn a new method of seeing people for who they are. We are all expressions of God, individualized, each unique, and each here on a mission to learn and evolve our understanding of creation and how we can manifest the best experience in this earth environment if we simply operate with the energy that the Creator operates. And that energy is love. So those of us who were raised with fear, I obey my parents or they'll punish me. That is incorrect. It is incorrect. But you can only teach what you've been taught until you receive a different teaching. And sometimes you can't even receive the different teaching because your mind is already geared toward a certain direction. So even the spiritually evolved beings among us that have fired many of the earth's religions, who came with a higher concept of how to live and how to treat each other, their teachings of love were still distorted back to fear, because that's what we knew. In order for us to be the best parents we must be, we have to undo the damage that was done to us as a result of being raised with fear. Fear of punishment, fear of humiliation, fear of emotional pain, physical pain, fear of abandonment, fear of rejection, fear of public ridicule, fear of isolation, fear of being unaccepted, fear of losing love. That's the foundation some of us experience as children because of the way our parents gave to us what was given to them. So first, we want to share a reflection by three Black moms in this show, where we first take a look at how our children have been influenced by verbal abuse to hate themselves or see themselves as unworthy or resent others who excel because of jealousy, because of self-hatred. A bully is generally the child that's being treated badly at home, and they believe they'll make themselves feel better if they treat someone else badly. That's really what we see in every kind of hostility in the human family. I've been treated badly, and I can feel better about myself if I make you feel bad. If I treat you bad, then I'll feel like I'm better. That's the foundation behind racism, sexism, classism, every kind of ism in which someone is being treated badly. And the person who's treating them badly is the person who feels badly about themselves, and they think that if they treat you bad, they'll feel better. That's what that is. And when we know that's what that is, then rather than us be affected by it, we can dissolve it and dissolve any impact it could have, because we can operate according to love of ourselves. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, will bring to you three black moms who will talk about how we speak to our children. What are we saying to those children whom we are raising? And what messages are we giving to them? And how are we building their self-esteem when we're tearing them down? And the reason we're tearing them down is because we don't like ours. We feel substandard. And we think we're going to feel better about ourselves if we tear down a child. Why else would you call a child stupid or ignorant or lazy? Because you fear that they're reflecting what you feel about yourself. So before you can parent a child in a way that is healthy and wholesome, you have to heal what's broken inside of you. And you have to admit it's there. And not be angry at the parents who put it there, because it was put inside of them as well. And now, in this time of evolution into a new earth with a higher consciousness, where we create all systems based on love and not fear, it's time to acknowledge the pain so that we can stop passing it on. When we come back, we'll be joined by three black moms, and we'll talk about how to say things that will raise your child's self-esteem. We'll be right back after this quick break, so stick and stay, don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment, so stay with us.
Hi, I'm Naima P, and if you're watching this, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world. People are using the internet to talk to friends, neighbors, family members, coworkers. People are on their cell phones and computers all day long. Now, if you're in business, that is great news. That means you can sell your products and services all day long and never have to leave your home. All you need is a media connection. Somebody to connect you to an audience. And that's why I'm talking to you today. We produce programs. And our audience members are people who shop. They buy clothes, food, beauty supplies, cleaning supplies, home repairs, transportation services, child care services. Whatever you're selling, they need to buy. We're your media connection. Just follow this link. And tomorrow, you can sit back and relax at home while your business is making you money.
And that's what we want you to be able to do. Sit back and relax at home while your business is making you money. Well, now, we want to bring you three black moms as we talk about the impact of what you say to your child. And we want you to think about what was said to you, and how was your self-esteem affected? Because the first lesson in the New Earth Homeschool Academy online course, Parenting with Peace, is to examine what is inside of you. And so it's time to peel back the layers. Every time you were told something negative about yourself, or you were inflicted with pain, you, in fact, have a scar perhaps not visible to the eye, but felt on the soul. So for those who are on our switchboard or listening online, listen to this conversation. And when we come back, we'll take your calls. And we're asking you the question. What was a thing said to you in your childhood that you feel had an impact on the way you see yourself? Whether it was someone saying you were bad, or you're stupid, or you can't learn math, or you don't know how to sit in your seat and be quiet, or you're lazy, or you probably end up like a no-good father. Whatever thing was said that is scarring to your soul, it's still there. We want you to reflect. And when we come back, we'll talk about the ways to undo that damage and belief systems that may have reinforced the idea that you're going to be punished by God when you die because you're a sinner. Sometimes our religions do more emotional damage ever undo in a lifetime because they're reinforced by the society in which we live. This is not to attack anyone's religious belief. It's to help you evolve out of belief systems that are hurting you and causing you to hurt other people, believing this is the way of creation, when in fact, the way of creation is only love. And what we experience here is the contrast, is the opposite, so that we can see what love is based on experiencing what love is not. Love is not pain. Love is not harsh judgment. Love is not punishment. It is guidance into understanding. So in the Parenting with Peace class, we are teaching parents how to first instill empathy in their child and understanding that you as a soul are connected to everything. And so your awareness of how your actions are affecting everything, your guiding principle to your behavior, not fear that I'm going to hit you or make you feel bad or reject you or withdraw love from you. I'm going to give you empathy and understanding of how you are an integral part of creation. And your actions, your decisions affect everything. And when I know how to instill this in you, there's never a need to cause you pain. There was never a need to cause you pain before, but it was done by those who were ignorant of how to guide with love and not fear. So listen to this conversation from three black moms. And then we'll talk about it when we come back.
Raise their hand. Now, I taught at a school once where the teacher would
reprimand the kids by saying, y'all gonna end up in prison. And I remember thinking, you know, that is not helpful. That is not going to give them the kind of encouragement they need to want to build better lives. They're going to rise to the occasion that you've given them. I remember in school, my teacher, Mrs. Moody, used to get on the class clowns, and she would make a comment like, you all going to end up old, toothless, and drunk on the corner. And do you know that when I went to one of my friend's funerals, three of them, Daryl, Eugene, and Henry, looked like old, broken-down men, toothless and raggedy. And I thought, oh, my goodness, Mrs. Moody, things are you saying to your children that's going to build them up? You know, the tongue can be an evil thing. You can make a comment that can totally destroy a child. And you need to say things that are going to build your child. What does the Bible say? The tongue is a restless evil. You can control horses and oxen, but you can't control your tongue. And a tongue will set a forest on fire by the evil things that come of it. What are you doing to build up your children and not tear them down?
You know, I think that a lot of parents believe that if you say negative things, that's going to encourage or prove you wrong. I remember our mother telling us that this is what she experienced as a child. You know, teachers in school that would maybe call the students dumb or, you know, say they're if they get an answer wrong, you know, kind of embarrass them. And this was supposed to be the way that this would encourage you to strive harder to prove the teacher wrong. I've seen a lot of teachers that use that method. I've seen a lot of parents that use that method, the negative motivation method. And for some people, that may work. But I found that also, well, for those people who say, you know, they had to try really hard to prove themselves, usually there's some other kind of personality disorder that comes with that, because you never really prove in your own mind, because you're always working against the people who have tried to put you down. And I found that positive reinforcement is a lot more effective, but I have witnessed, a lot of my friends who teach, I've witnessed that negative motivation, which really isn't motivation, and a lot of times the child does end up living down to your predictions or up to your predictions. If you tell them, you know, you're going to be nothing, you're going to end up in jail, you're going to be a dropout, you might have a few that say, well, I'm going to prove them wrong, I'm going to really try hard, but you have a whole lot more that say, yeah, I guess I'm nothing. And I mean, how do parents realize that they may be using that negative method because it was used on them? How do you recognize when you're actually doing that for your own child?
You know, we talk a lot about, and derisively, about participation trophies. Every kid gets a trophy just for showing up, and how we need to do more to make sure that people earn, you know, whatever they're given. The one thing you do not need to earn is your parents' love and support. Your parents brought you into this world either by birth, by adoption, accepting you into guardianship, foster care, however your parent is parenting you, you deserve by your existence to be supported, loved, and believed in. And that is just part of being a parent. And in our culture, we tend to revisit our trauma. And we have been traumatized for 400 years. But we revisit our trauma on our own children. And we don't tell them, you are my gift from God. You are my hope for the future. The reason why slaves
enslaved people could continue to have their children, even if they didn't know if they would be able to raise them, was because that was the hope that someday, we would be free. That someday came when we got a black woman as our first lady who came from enslaved people. And we need to remember that encouraging our children is what motivates them, not discouraging them by telling them they're stupid, they're ugly, they're worthless, they're going to end up in jail, they're bad. I remember there was once a woman who came to visit, who was there with her husband sitting in my mother's house. And the little boy was, I want to say, 2.5 maybe. And the young mother kept saying, well, he's bad. And I said, please don't say that. He's not bad. He is age appropriately curious. And he is showing that he is intelligent because he is curious of his surroundings. So don't tell him he's being bad. And that's what we tell our children. We tell our children when they are being appropriately curious, when they are having an appropriate meltdown, that they're being bad. They're being children. And we need to remember that our children are precious. And that's the thing, is that we have to get out of that slave mentality, denigrating our children, and into that slave mentality of, you are our hope for our future, that one day we will be free. I remember, and I'm going to mention my favorite television show, SCI, and there was an episode where one of the main characters was tasked to be an undercover and pose as someone else because he was Egyptian and all this stuff. And the person who was supposed to be helping him had been one of his teachers and had denigrated him the whole time, telling him he was going to get his partner killed. And the character and the actor, Zico Zaki, who is a Muslim American, and he is Egyptian American, had said at this time, why did you ride me so hard? Well, this man had seen something special in him, and he wanted to make him prove himself. So he kept telling him, you need to quit. And the man told him, you know, that didn't work with my own son either. And he didn't have any relationship with his son because he used that method of negative encouragement. And it was an interesting dynamic because obviously Agent Zidane got the job done, but it was that hurt that he had carried this whole time from someone saying, you're not good enough. Stop telling our kids you're not good enough. They're not just good enough.
Important thing for parents to do, as you said, Cheryl, to move out of that kind of negative reinforcement that was visited on us, other people, over time. There's an article in this month's Parents Magazine about how to encourage your child through difficulties, through them just learning things, through their natural curiosity, and how to embellish the strengths they have. One of the examples they gave was that when your child is having a hard time doing something, they're struggling with it, use that occasion to remind them of some effort they made and something else in which they succeeded. Don't say, oh, you can't do that and that's no good and blah, 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 blah. Say something that is going to reinforce their strength, that they are trying to accomplish something. And it could be anything from a homework problem to putting together a puzzle. I don't know where that attitude came from, that if you say something bad about your kid, that's going to make them want to prove themselves. It's just going to beat them down. That's what people do when they're putting someone else in bondage. That's what bullies do. You know, you say the mean thing, you say the awful thing, and instead of the person thinking, oh, I'm going to prove to you that I'm not like that, something know, a bruised reed he will not break. You know, that's from Isaiah, talking about God who will restore a person. If you are bruised, you are not going to be broken. That little light is going to be given more fire to help them along. And if you are a parent who is used to using that kind of method, change your mind about that. Say something kind to your child that is going to encourage them, that is going to build them up. Because if you don't do it, who will?
I hear a lot of parents that use that negative encouragement or just really hostile language. And even when you try to correct them, like, sure, like you did with the lady that called her son bad, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Even after I've done it, feel bad. I mean, even when you explain it and you show an example and you say, oh, he's so intelligent. Oh, he's probably going to be, like, you see them maybe trying to, maybe they're trying to figure out something and they're filling with some electronics or something like that. And so the parent will say something like, oh, you're so bad. And if I say something like, oh, he's really intelligent. Oh, he's probably going to be an engineer. I see you trying to take apart that radio. You know, I try to set the example. And even after that, the parent will still go back and reinforce the negative. And it's the hardest thing to get them to hear you and consciously change the habit because that's the only thing they know. And sometimes it's frustrating because you don't want to reprimand a parent in front of their child, but at the same time you want to say, "Well, you gotta stop."
But that's true. That's true. It's like you have to be the gentle one who says, "Oh, you know what? You may think of this as bad, but I see a light in this person. I see curiosity. I see intelligent reasoning. I see this." Neil deGrasse Tyson has done that, and we know who he is. He's an astrophysicist. He's brilliant. And he had talked about children, you know, like filling things or they're learning about gravity or making noise. They're learning about these things. And he couched it in a way of, you are curious about the world and you have a theory and now you're proving it. And it's interesting because one of the more intelligent people on the planet doesn't see this as bad behavior. So why are we seeing it as bad behavior? And it's very frustrating to see that, but we all know hurt people. And we are traumatized, and we have been traumatized. And for all the things that we grew up in, I try to do totally different. We didn't grow up hearing "I love you." There's not a day that goes by that my daughter doesn't hear "I love you." There's not a day that goes by that she doesn't say "I love you." It's like, because it's important to hear. Yeah, you know, when we grew up, the idea of parenting was just parenting. You know, you weren't your kid's friend. You weren't their confidant. You were just their parent.
Right.
Well, I'm not going to be my daughter's friend. I'm not. But we are friendly. She is an adult now, so we can be friendlier. I'm always going to be her mom, but I'm not the mom of a 6-year-old. I'm the mom of a 22-year-old, so we can have adult conversations.
Yeah.
We can have adult
friends.
Right. We can express that love because I will tell her, and maybe that's wrong, but I will tell her, you are the center of my universe. You know,
it's important for our children to know that they matter. They're important. I think it's important to say those things that maybe we didn't hear. But also, I think it's important to set the example for, because you never know who's watching you when you interact with your child. Even out in public. Of course, now, like you say, our children are grown, so there's a different kind of interaction. But I do remember, like, when Zakiya was, she was very young. I think we had a party at the house. Matter of fact, we had somebody's wedding at our house, and we were cleaning up afterwards. And and I'm running the vacuum, and some of the people stand around, you know, they help them do the dishes and stuff like that, and I'm running the vacuum, and the kids, you know, keep trying to grab the vacuum and everything, and, you know, she's running in between and so forth, and I said, oh, you want to help, you know, and so, you know, one of my friends was like, said, oh, wow, that's really interesting how you did it, and I was saying, well, get out of the way.
There is a moment when you have to rethink that, and I think part of the reason that young parents have a hard time maybe with toddlers, they were not, or older children, they were not trained in that way, and I think there are a lot of resources that are available to young parents to learn other methods of redirecting your child, of encouraging your child, because there's way too much of that. I know for myself, I tried to be extremely encouraging to my children when they were younger because I know the hurt that comes from being told things like the older you get, the stupider you get, use your head for something besides a hat rack. I mean, these things are laughable when you look back at them, but at the time, they're kind of painful to hear that kind of stuff. And it doesn't really help your child build confidence in themselves and their own ability. I think a lot of young parents learn by seeing older parents exhibit good encouragement skills. Sometimes these are things you may learn in some kind of parental training, and they have those things available. You can go on YouTube for anything. Look that up. How do I encourage my child? And you will find all kinds of methods that will give you skills and steps to move away from negative reinforcement, which isn't reinforcement at all. Really, it is damaging behavior. It is damaging. It's a damaging way to try to teach your child to do better, learn better, and have confidence in themselves.
And if you want something that's more centered around, you know, Black families, because there are some things that we do that are different, some good, not bad. I'm not sure if the name of the book is Raising Black Children, or if it's about Black parenting, but the author is my daughter's former first pediatrician, and her name is Anne, A-N-N-E, Beal, B-E-A-L, and she wrote a book about Black parenting. I encourage anyone, I went and bought it. I encourage anyone to go out and find it. You could probably find it on Amazon, like the world is on Amazon, or find it somewhere. Maybe it's in a independent bookstore, always good. But, you know, there are resources for us because we have our own way of doing things. We talk about corporal punishment on here. But a lot of the things that we do, is just, there is just a lot of negativity that have been visited upon us. The whole thing, you know, get any of us in a room and Black women can talk about the torture of getting our hair done when we were little. Even my daughter can talk about that, even though I tried not to be torturous because she's tender-headed like me. So there is a lot of things that we do that we don't necessarily think of as triggering, but they are triggering. And if you tell a child that they're stupid when they're little, or they can't get anything right, or what's wrong with you, or all those kinds of things, you're only extending the trauma that has been passed down.
Yeah.
You're passing down that trauma instead of saying, you know what, it's like the whole thing with us deciding not to drink. This ends with me. This cycle of alcoholism ends with me. This cycle of psychological trauma ends with me. This cycle of saying, you know, the older you get, the stupider you get, or not saying I love you, this ends with me. I'm going to be the parent that I wish I had.
Going to be the parent that I wished I'd had. That's what we want as the goal for those who choose to take the Parenting with Peace class. I want to be the parent that I wished I had had. And it's not to make us angry at our parents or blaming them for everything. It's for us to take responsibility for the lessons we learn. Earth is an environment that you learn based on the contrast. So what does love feel like? Love feels good. Love brings joy. Love makes you happy. Love makes you feel satisfied with who you are. Love motivates you. Love inspires you. Love is pleasant. Love is creative. Love makes you desire to learn more and be more and try more. Love gives you courage and energy and strength and a feeling of power. Love heals all hurts. But if what we have experienced is non-love, then the pain of the non-love is what we want to eradicate. That means not passing on non-loving behavior that was given to us by parents who didn't know any better, because that's what was given to them. So we're going to take a short break and come right back and take your calls. If you're listening online and want to join this conversation, give us a call, 515-605-9235. Press 1 if you're ready to speak. We are not joined with the American Muslim 360 channel today because our co-host Kareem Hamid is participating in the Eid celebration, which I'll be attending shortly. And this celebration is one that is happening all over the Muslim world as people celebrate those 30 days of fasting that was meant as a spiritual cleansing. The earth is going through a cleansing. And once you're clean, you don't put something dirty back into that which you've just cleaned. Spiritually, it's time for us to evolve. And it's time for us to evolve with Mother Earth to a place where only love exists, only the vibration, the high vibration of love exists. That means all of the things that we do must be motivated by love and not fear. So today we're going to assist in the process of learning better parenting skills. Are you using love or fear to shape your child? We'll be right back after this quick message. So stick and stay. Don't stray away. Be back in a moment.
Hi, I'm Naima Latif. And if you're watching this, that means you're one of the 4.6 billion people from around the world who are using an electronic device to talk to people. In these times, people are using the internet to talk to everybody. Friends, neighbors, family members, co-workers. People are on their cell phones and computers all day long. Now, if you're in business, that is greatness. That means you can sell your products and services all day long and never have to leave your home. All you need is a medium. Somebody to connect you to an audience. And that's why I'm talking to you today. We produce programs. And our audience members are people who shop. They buy food, beauty supplies, cleaning supplies, home repair, transportation services, child care services. Whatever you're selling, they need to buy. We're your media. Just follow this link. And tomorrow, you can sit back and relax at home while your business is making you money.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. I'm Naima Latif, and we've got callers on the line. You'll be able to hear the show on the on-air radio network right after it's broadcast today. And, of course, the American Muslim 360 channel, the members are celebrating the global celebration of Eid after the month of Ramadan and the 30 days of fasting. This is such a wonderful spiritual time to be alive. And we are preparing for a new earth. Some people looked at the eclipse of yesterday as spiritual transformation. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And the transformation is one in which no negativity can exist. We must ascend to the vibration of love, which means that's how we're to raise our children. That's how we're to raise our children. And we can't do it if we're holding on to negative belief systems that make us think that the creator of the universe is some mean, punitive entity that throws people into the pits of hell, fire, and damnation. And so we spend a lifetime telling our children that they're worthless, dirty, filthy rags and unworthy. And then we expect them to excel. And they may excel, but they have so many personality disorders. Narcissism, jealousy, cruelty, mean-spiritedness, selfishness, all of these things, they're not natural to the human spirit. They become traits that we acquire as a result of us not feeling good about ourselves. Racism is about people coming from a culture where they were made to feel bad. And they were able to make themselves feel better by creating another group of people upon whom they could inflict meanness, believing that that would make them feel better about themselves. When you understand that that's what racism is, people who already feel bad about themselves, wanting to feel better about themselves by making someone else feel bad, that removes all of its sting, all of its power, and you simply realize that you have a responsibility not to place yourself under the authority or the responsibility of people who have that inside of them, and you do what's necessary to take responsibility for your life. Everywhere in the world where there is oppression by people who have been treated badly and think they're going to feel better about themselves if they treat someone else badly. Remove yourself from systems in which you depend on these people for your survival. And use your God-given, God-expressing creative power to create what you need for yourself. This is why we've introduced a whole new economic system that has nothing to do with the monetary system, and it's totally within your power to participate and ultimately free yourself from those who seek to make you feel like a lesser person by withholding from you what you need. Every system that we introduce on the Female Solution is about self-empowerment. Don't complain about what other people are doing to you, because as long as in your own spirit you're feeling unworthy of good treatment, you will stay in that state of being misused. You can only get out of it when you change how you feel about yourself and take back your power to create for yourself. And the most crippling thing is when you have grown up in a belief system in which you are taught God doesn't even like you. You're born bad. I got to beat the devil out of you. And you're constantly being inflicted with pain by people who you trusted to give you love. It's damaging. And it has damaged you. And it has made you believe that this is the way you're supposed to raise a child. And that's incorrect. So in the Parenting with Peace class, our first step is to help you get rid of, to eradicate, to remove, to cleanse all of those misshapen beliefs that make you not like yourself. Therefore, that's what makes you attack others. Because there's no need to attack anybody when you love and accept yourself. Then you can accept others as the unique expression of God that they are. And it's okay that they're different. They don't need to be like you. They're unique in who they are. God's unique expression coming through them. You can appreciate it rather than condemn it, which means changing everything that has come into you that made you hate yourself. So let's take some calls. And if you're listening online and want to join this conversation, you can give us a call, 515-605-9325. This show will be on the On Air Radio Network. Right afterwards, you can go to onaireverywhere.com and you can listen to this broadcast. We also are not on the AM 360 line today with our co-host. He's conducting or preparing to conduct the Eid celebration ceremonies. And so we're grateful. Brothers and sisters all across the world are now experiencing that bliss that comes from having gone through a cleansing. So let's all begin to cleanse ourselves so we can create that new earth. Let's go to our phone line. And area code 706202, Grand Rising. Thank you for joining us today on the Female Solution as we talk about learning better parenting skills. Are you using love or fear to shape your child? So introduce yourself to our listening and viewing audience, please.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Eid Mubarak. Yes, wa alaikum salam. We appreciate you so very much. Our dear brother,
yes,
Kwame,
right,
from the stolen land.
Thank you.
Of the
stolen.
Give us your location.
Yeah, I'm here in the stolen land of the Muscogee Creek in Eatonton, Georgia. You know, it's kind of great to hear because Eatonton, Georgia, and the reason I say that because, you know, we just had a releasing of the second edition, second movie of Color Purple, and the author of that book was born here in Eatonton, Georgia. So why I honor her by saying that. And the other part is this land was stolen. But about teaching about parenting, the part first is that then that each generation out of relative obscurity must either fulfill its mission or we will all fail. We sometimes look at how our parents gave us what they gave us because that was what was given to them. So we're looking going back just three generations, I'd say four generations in some people, because I know that my mother knew her great-grandmother, who was born in captivity. She was born a slave in 1854. She knew her big mama, and she talked about in the way in which they did. And my imama, that was my great-grandmother that named me. And I watched. She was a teacher, and what she went to Rush College. The part that I'm saying is that each generation, you know, we see and struggle because our parents in wanting to be more. And you asking about things as a child. I remember riding with my grandfather and driving down there around Cairo, Illinois, and he ran a light. And this white cop came up to the window and said, "Boy, didn't you see that light?" And I told my grandfather, I said, "Dad, I'm a boy, you a man. That's what you told me." And the policeman looked into the window and said, "You better teach that boy something." And I watched my grandfather's smile disappear from his face. And that was the part of first time ever knowing the name of it, but it was called racism. And the fear and the challenges that we did come up with. And now we have more and we do less because, you know, 12 days from now, April 22nd, I will have been clean and drug-free for 43 years. I had to break the curse of my father's family of the drunkenness and using drugs when I went to Vietnam. The part that I'm saying is that we have to understand that some of us have children for the wrong reasons. I will have this child because I want somebody to love me. I'll have this child because I'll get more on my check. Next time after I have this child, I get a bigger check, and I'm gonna have this child because I want him to love me. You know, we had children, and this is the part that we have to understand. We got to correct ourselves first before we talk about how we're going to correct them, but we have to start in the ones in the classroom in kindergarten. Because as your sister was saying on there, that this teacher told them that they were going to be ball mouth and raggedy, and guess what happened? They did.
That's what happened.
Because the lack of, of who gives us the love and support, you know, and these are the other parents that we have when we turn our children over to a school system. Those
yes.
are the new parents that have to be
those
guiding
the
them. Because they yes. spend more time in school than they do in our home.
That's true. That's true. And you think about the things that teachers say to your child, because the way you parent is the way you're going to teach. And if you're verbally abusive to your children, that's how you're going to be to the children that you teach. And again, that negative motivation, if I say something bad to you, that's going to motivate you to try to prove me wrong. That doesn't work. And most of us, unfortunately, grew up with parents who had that belief system, that if I tell you something negative about yourself, you're going to work hard to prove me wrong. What it did, it tore us down. Now, the interesting thing about your experience with your grandfather, you say?
Right.
Many of us saw our parents. I witnessed my father have to, you know, put on the, you know, smiling face to police officers. You were like, yes, sir, yes, sir. You know, I saw that, you know, and I remember asking my mother, what do you remember about your father? Because her father passed away when she was, you know, I think she was still a younger child. But she said she remembered, well, my papa didn't allow no sass and no white folks. So, you know, you think about the police officer saying you better tease that boy something. What they were telling our children, what our parents to do and grandparents, is to teach us to bow to their authority and to be subservient and to treat them as if they were superior. Otherwise, they could face the pain of death. And that's what we were supposed to keep instilling in our children, that slave culture that says this is the superior being. So, you know, you can just imagine how hard it was to break out of that fear-based teaching and the brutality that we inflict on our children, trying to beat them into submission out of fear for their lives.
And you know, that part that we deal with, but I went to Lucy Flowers on the West Side in 1956 when they first started segregation. And I remember I used to have to run home every day because it was integrated. And those white kids did not want us, and those teachers did not want us there. If my mother mm-hmm. was in out front of the school for me when I got out of school, I had to run home because I would get chased and called the N-word by these older children. And the teachers didn't care. The teachers were even more so against us, even for them to be teaching us, they did not care about that. And these are your kindergarten, first and second grade teachers. It wasn't until I went to Robert S. Abbott and moved into the projects that I got to see that there were black teachers. So it's the mindset that you give a child in that era. But see, those were the times of the struggle. Now it's a whole different world. And you know, the children nowadays have multicultural. You know, when we started mm-hmm. teaching black history, they were saying, no, this is wrong. You don't need that's segregation. I mean, it should be multicultural, not black history.
Well, what we were trying to do was undo the damage of them teaching us or misteaching us all the denigrating things they wanted us to believe about ourselves. And so we're trying to undo that by teaching the truth of what actually happened. And this is perhaps something that can help those who are still struggling with the pain that they experience. Because you talk to every family, there's alcoholism. What your grandfather endured, that was deeply humiliating. And his drinking was a way to self-medicate the pain of being humiliated and not being
no,
able to
No, that
stand
was
up
my father. I have
your
to
father, okay.
That wasn't
okay.
my grandfather.
Okay.
That was my father, because my grandfather My father was in and out of my life. My grandfather showed me how to be a man by constructing and building and working with him. And these are the ways in which I got that part of manhood from him. My father was a drunk and in and out of my our lives. And this is the part, because I remember 7 years old, my father sat me down, gave me a Viceroy cigarette and a glass of Primer beer, and said, "Smoke this and drink this, and you'll be a man." 7 years
old.
He
was teaching what he knew. This is what he knew. And if we can forgive our parents for whatever acts of ignorance, for whatever drug addiction, alcoholism, ignorance that they had, because this is what they knew. They gave us what they had. If we can ingest that and understand their behavior, it wasn't about us, our worthiness, or any of that. It was the pain that they had experienced. That is such a big first step for most of us who grew up with parents who had various levels of personality disorders because of what they experienced from their parents. And when a man has to constantly endure the fear of being humiliated or the humiliation, what does he do? He seeks some kind of way to relieve the pain. And you mentioned even girls who get pregnant, you know, because I need somebody to love me. Because they're growing up in an unloving environment. They're not loved. They're told they're ugly. They're stupid. They're, you know, lazy, ignorant, all these things. It ain't going to be nothing. So if I have somebody who loves me, if I have this intimate act, and maybe I can feel like it's love for that moment, even though for the guy it might just be, hey, I'm just using you as the same drug to get rid of my emotional pain. So you end up with babies made through people who were seeking a way to get rid of the emotional pain of being unloved. And this is what we have had. And so for all of us who've experienced that, if we can forgive those who did things to us because they were in pain, that can help us let go of holding pain, even understanding racism. Racism really isn't about you. It's about the people who feel bad about themselves, and they think they'll feel better about themselves if they make you feel bad. That's what a bully is. I've been treated bad at home. I'm being beaten at home. I'm being degraded at home. I'm being denigrated at home. I'm being made to feel unloved at home. When I go outside, I can feel powerful if I put you down. So you talk about an entire continent of people, a lot of them coming from a culture that was very brutal, you know, public floggings and all of that. Low self-esteem, but now I have a chance to feel better about myself because there's this whole race of people that even the government says you can treat them badly. We can put you as authority over them. You can feel better about being poor and everything else because you can treat these people badly, and then you'll feel better. And so that's the culture of America. That's the foundation of racism in America. It has to do with the low self-esteem of white people. If you know that that's what that is, then it doesn't have any effect on you at all because, you know, their behavior has nothing to do with you. It doesn't define you. It can't define you. Can't confine you. It can't do anything but express what's inside of them. And that's the deeper spiritual understanding that we will help the next generation of children understand so that they have no fear of anybody, nor can anybody penetrate their sense of security and high self-esteem, because they know they're an expression of God, and nobody can change that. The only thing they can do is express what's inside of them. It's a teaching that is at the foundation of the parenting class we're introducing in July of this year to help parents begin to create children that think differently and will therefore create a new world, because it's not based in fear. It's based in love. So, Baba Kwame, before we take the next caller, what do you think thing that had the biggest impact on you? You coming out of drinking, taking drugs, what do you think was the source of your pain that caused you to turn to something to make yourself feel better, even though it was chemically induced? What was the maybe series of memories or main memory that caused you pain that you were carrying?
Adult Children of Alcoholics taught me, and John Bradshaw on the inner child, And the part of it was is that I had to go back within myself. There's that little boy still there because he tends to come up and want to run away and hide or anesthetize. But I have to be able to be that man to that child inside of me first and know how to show love to that child that I didn't get from those men in my grandfather and some men in my life that, yes, I'm very proud. Because the thing is, until I can identify and help that inner child grow and know that, no, you don't have to be this way and we're not going to be this way, is the part of self that you have to get in touch with. It's the creator first, it's me second, and everybody else, father, mother, brother, all of it, is that you have to choose. Because the sun shines on everybody every day. That's why I say grand rising, is that the creator shows you he loves you by giving you the light and energy of life. You have to make choices in saying, who do I like and dislike? Because it's a choice. And the ism is nothing but a person with an ill, sick mind. That's why it's at the end of the word, alcoholism, racism, sexism. Is that I have to understand those people are sick. It is not me to make them well. It is to me to do the things that to show others that the sickness can end with self first. Learning to love me and understanding that I am my own person because I'm the one I've been waiting for.
I'm the one I've been waiting for, absolutely. Well, Baba Kwame, this is exactly what our message is. I am the one I've been waiting for. We're going to take another quick call, and then we're going to take a break and come back with three back moms to talk about the fact that all of us are going through this pain, and we need therapy. So why are Black people feeling like, oh, we can just, you know, go to church, pray to the Lord, oh, you know, talk to your pastor, and we still go through this pain because we are feeling like we're supposed to just tough it up. And that's, again, that old slavery time belief. Just suck it up and deal with it because this is life. But we need to heal. And if you are listening online and want to join this conversation, you can give us a call, 515-605-9325, and press 1 so we know you have something to say. Got a moment before we take a break. 312-882 Grand Rising. Thank you for joining us. And tell us what was a thing that affected your upbringing, what you were told about yourself.
We on Yah Shalom. We don't die, we multiply. Black power and black is beautiful as you are. Naima Latif, a superstar. The thing, you know, that, you know, I learned was the difference between love and hate. And, you know, I learned that love is the greatest, and love is made of a house and a home. And that's what I had in my house, in my home. And yet, you know, I was a what I call a rebel, or I rebel against, you know, some of the things that my parents believed in. So I noticed I had changed at an early life. This is your brother from a different mother, Minister Robert Floyd.
Well, you know that's a real powerful
in
thing.
Chicago.
And,
you know, I started out as being a rebel with Emmett Till's funeral because my people did not want me to go to my father and my mother. And I asked them, you know, when I found out that Emmett Till got killed on August the 28th, 1955, in Money, Mississippi. I went to the funeral. I asked my father and my mother, can I go to the funeral? And they said no. So I began to feel hurt. And then I asked them, why y'all don't want me to go? They say, because you don't suppose to, and we don't want you to see what they did to that little boy. And then I knew that it was something in life that was different. even about my parents. So then I asked them again. I said, why y'all don't want me to go? We scared for you because that might happen to you.
Yes.
But then, yeah.
Yes.
You
that,
know,
that,
so
that's
by
it.
That time.
We got to take a We got to take a quick break, but we're going to come back. But
can
yeah,
I come back,
what you said. Yeah, we'll come back. You know, a lot of our parents had real terror instilled in them from that Emmett Till, and so many parents would beat their children out of fear. You know, I told you not to go to this place. Whap, whap, whap. You know, I told you not to, you know, do this thing. I told you to be in the house before dark. They had such fear of our lives. And if we can forgive them for maybe being harsh and cruel and beating us, understanding that it was their fear, then perhaps we can forgive but not repeat what they did because it was damaging. We'll be right back after this quick break. We want you to stick and stay. Don't stray away. We'll be back in a moment. So just stay with us.
We have an opportunity to transform the whole global society in the next 50 years. 50 years from now, the earth will be populated by a new generation of adults, many of whom are yet unborn. Our mission is to nurture them in childhood with love, guidance, and protection, and to raise them in healthy, happy families. If we impart values of compassion, generosity, and respect for fellow human beings in the next generation of children, they will create a world where people can live together in peace. This is our goal. Be a part of the transformation. Get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. Go to www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com.
And we are back. You're listening to and watching the Female Solution Global Radio TV show. I'm Naima Latif. And as always, we appreciate you for joining us today. We want to share with you, and we're going to perhaps get a chance to take more calls after we share this with three Black moms. If we don't, of course, we encourage you to write your comments. If you're watching us on Facebook and YouTube, we're on the Female Solution Facebook page and Female Solution YouTube channel. And today, of course, we are sharing with you some words from three Black moms, and we're asking you to consider so that you can learn better parenting skills. Are you using love or fear to shape your child? Well, most of us have been beaten out of the fear of our parents that really meant to show love, but they just didn't know any better. And we need therapy because many of us have habits, whether it's overeating, smoking, drinking, illicit sex with people we don't really love. We just want to feel better. You know, all kinds of things because we're hurt. So when we acknowledge that, we can get help and stop passing on the trauma. I'm going to share with you again some words from three Black moms. We want you to reflect on what we need to do to acknowledge we're in pain and get help.
I'm Barbara.
I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Naima. We're three Black moms.
Go to church. You know, you don't need any therapy. You just need God. We, in our community, have been telling each other for years, centuries even, years of abuse, trauma, sexual trauma, violent trauma, all kinds of trauma we decide we don't need to talk to someone about it. We just need to talk to God. Today we want to talk about therapy. Black people, we can use therapy. It's okay, and we need to talk about stigma of going to therapists and talking to someone and getting ourselves right, because so many of us have lived for so many years with pain, and we tend to, instead of dealing with that pain in a healthy manner, we turn to substances, we turn to violence, sometimes we try to turn to God, which is one form of therapy that works. But we need to stop using our pain and our trauma as a badge of honor. It's not great. It's not strong. It's not noble to be the strong, resilient Black women who can take any kind of pain and not have to worry about, you know, her own mental health. Mental illness is an illness. If you broke your leg, you wouldn't try to pray it away. You would go to a doctor, and you would get it maybe surgically fixed, and you would start to heal. The same way, we need to learn to start to heal our mental state. So, how do we do that? How do we start to heal?
That's a very good question. And I have seen so many people who are, you know, they're going through pain, trauma, and they're supposed to just suck it up. And that's kind of been our history as Black women. You know, just, sympathy when you cried over hurt. And if you research, you know that goes all the way back to slavery,
mm-hmm.
where the thought was, since you're not going to get any nurturing, I need you to be tough enough so that you don't expect it, so that you can do without it, so that you're not being babied, you're not being weak. And we're believing that if you withhold affection from a child, they'll learn not to need it. So you have all of these people for generations raised with no nurturing, and they got all these emotional traumas because they didn't receive the nurturing that you need. And they did a study a while back. I think it was on soldiers in war who suffered post-traumatic stress disorder. The ones who didn't get nurturing, the ones that didn't have good childhood memories, those are the ones who ended up with post-traumatic stress disorder when they had been through a trauma. The ones who came from a loving, nurturing background, got the kind of love, care, affection that they needed as a child, they were able to draw back on that when they had been through some horrific thing. You know, you see your best friend's head blown off in battle. But they were able to recover from that if they had a foundation where there was love, there was nurturing, there was affection. Us believing that you don't need it, or if you withhold it from a child and they'll learn not to need it, that doesn't work. That just makes them more susceptible to mental illness.
I have found that the important thing is to recognize the need for trauma to be addressed, and also to recognize that one's pastor, with all of their training, may not be equipped in every area, which is why we send people to professionals. Now, I recognize in my own family the need for us to have family counseling because our communication skills had broken down. We came from a situation where when we moved, I intuitively knew that we were going to need some kind of therapy just to help us manage interaction in a stable environment. And that needed to be created by us being able to talk out things that we had kind of suppressed and really express the fears and the pains and the expectations that we had in our lives as parents, as children, and learning how to deal with that was immensely helpful. I think because we have celebrities that laud how they have gone to a therapist and how that has helped them overcome whatever personal trauma they have, it has somehow seemed to make it okay, but less people are thinking, you know, this is nonsense. We can take care of this ourselves. We can work our way through it. And I will tell you that those things are extremely, that kind of thinking is extremely detrimental. And I will tell you why. My first opportunity at teaching school down here in Florida, it was a private school. I didn't realize until some time in which I had been teaching that everyone there was related to everyone else. There were brothers and sisters and half-brothers and half-sisters and cousins that were all in the same classroom. They were related to the principal, who was related to the kindergarten teacher, who was related to the seventh grade teacher, and who was related to the cooking staff. And really, it was like a family business. But what happened is there was such trauma because the basis of their system was based on the fact that the daughter had been killed in a gang shooting. And every year they did a march around the neighborhood. Every month they did a march around the neighborhood. And they, you know, said, we know that somebody here knows what happened. No peace, no justice, and this kind of thing. But because everyone was related, they were all affected by that gang shooting. And then on the anniversary of the daughter's death, the father took his own life. And that traumatized everyone in the school because they were all related. And there were other things that came out over my time teaching there where I recognized that there was some serious mental and emotional issues that had not been dealt with because all of these people were related, but they did not go to counseling. I don't even know if counseling was extended to them. You know, when there's like a mass shooting at a school, there is systems in place to help students be able to deal with that trauma. They have these in these schools. Some of these private minority-based schools do not avail themselves of that. I think that places in the city, places in the school system, try to provide an opportunity for people to deal emotionally and mentally with different kinds of trauma that will happen in their school or in their home life. And we should not be afraid to avail ourselves of those systems. They're not out to something bad to you or know your family business. They're trying to help you deal with issues in a place that will help you not have a mental breakdown.
I heard this said once, and I hear it many times. Hurt people hurt people.
Yes.
And we keep hurting each other because we are hurt. When you see these children who are bullying, and we talk about bullying, a lot of times those children are bullied, and so they are taking out their hurt by hurting someone else. When you see people who are violent, and understand this, the problem isn't excusing it. If someone hurts me, I need justice too. But it's not on me to turn around and hurt someone else, because that doesn't take away my pain. That just passes it on and helps it to grow. And we need to stop taking so much pride in the growth of our pain. We, you know, our history didn't start with slavery. Our history here may have started with slavery. But hey, we were kings and queens across the pond. We had civil civilizations across the pod. We had inventions. We had languages. We had skills. We still have those things, but we also have the pain and the trauma that came from being beaten down since 1619. Till we deal with that, we can't deal with a lot of other things. When every time, and this is the thing that people always talk about, as soon as someone talks about, you know, cops killing blacks, they start talking about black-on-black crime. Well, there's also white-on-white crime every time there's a mass shooting, but we don't talk about it that way. What we do need to talk about in that black-on-black narrative in our community is the crime that we are perpetrating against ourselves, against our family members, and against people of our community because we are hurting, because we are hurt. We need more therapists. We need more black therapy. We need more people who can understand the trauma that we're coming from and not gaslight us into telling us, oh, I'm sure that didn't happen. We know when things happen. We knew about microaggressions and macroaggressions long before there were names for them. So we need to be able to talk about them. We need to be able to get ourselves into a safe space instead of do that whole tradition of don't put your business in the street. Don't air your dirty laundry. Don't you tell nobody what goes on in this house. And stop wearing our pain as if it's nothing but a participation trophy. And it's something that we don't want to participate in and we shouldn't participate in. Therapy and asking for help is a sign of strength. It is not a sign of weakness.
Yeah. And, you know, you don't want to have people feel that they are telling your business in the street. If you are going to a professional, those confessions are confidential. They're confidential statements. And a lot of times people need to be able to recognize that there is someone that's going to help you out of this mental downward spiral where you have been traumatized over some instance that happened in your life or some instance that happened to someone close to you or just some experience that has so made you internalize the hurt and the pain to a point of where you are not functioning in a healthy manner. A lot of times when they investigate some of these people, like the most recent one where an 18-year-old went and shot up a bunch of employees from a place where he used to work, and I can be real general about it because it happens so often, by the time you see this, they will probably be some other place with the same scenario. But they always say that this person had mental health issues. And for the most part, a lot of times these people do. But in dealing with mental health issues, you have to realize that certain behaviors can be observed by a professional. Sometimes it may even just be a teacher, where you have a five-year-old coming to school with a weapon because one of his parents said that they were going to kill the others. I have experienced this. And so you recognize that sometimes traumas at a very early age, and if not checked at that time, it just escalates into something else that leads to something more dangerous. You have to not be afraid. When they tell you if you see something, say something, you have to not be afraid to tell someone who can provide an opportunity for help.
I think knowing that, as you say, hurt people, 100% of the people who are in prison are there because of some type of mental illness. It's just not officially termed mental illness, but it is mental illness because you only have a desire to hurt someone else if you're ill, if something is hurting you. That is not a natural thing. You just, you know, wake up and you want to strangle somebody or stab somebody, then you are in pain. And because it was not dealt with, you act out. I remember when this group, Project Orange Tree, I believe the name it was, young people who were addressing the issue of youth violence and when Hadiya Pendleton, the young lady who got killed, the honor student, that everybody was all horrified, and Michelle Obama came to Chicago to her funeral. Well, everybody was focusing on these terrible boys that did it, but then the youth group that was addressing the whole issue of crime and violence and the pain that youth were in was saying, look, this is somebody who had just lost a friend to gang violence and was acting in retaliation at who he thought was a perpetrator, you know, shooting and, of course, hit Hadiya. But what they said was if his grief had been handled properly, maybe the shooting would not have happened. But since young people are expected, inner city young people are expected to just suck it up. Yeah, I had my best friend die, and, you know, my brother got killed the day after that. And, you know, I'll just keep going to school like nothing happened, like they're not traumatized. And then when they react, we call them criminals. But all of this is behavior that is reacting out of emotional trauma, and we just decide to act like it's normal. And then we call people criminal when they respond to the trauma that they're experiencing. So if we would look at people differently, and knowing when anybody acts out, it is not a normal behavior. It is not an emotionally well behavior, and we can get to where the problem is. We're lacking compassion as a society because we're so quick to criminalize people. And, of course, we all know this, that when some mad shooter kills a bunch of people, they happen to be white, they got a mental illness, and a black person, they happen to shoot one person, they're a criminal. What's up with that, you know?
Yes.
So we know that there is a racial disparity when it comes to assessing when somebody's mentally ill. Everybody who does crime is mentally ill. We haven't dealt with the causes of, we haven't dealt with a society that's ill, that creates the illness, that creates the stress, that, I mean, if somebody goes and robs a store because they need to get the money to pay their rent because they got to keep them getting put out the house, I would say that's probably, you know, mental ill. You're trying to keep from getting evicted out into the cold and you don't have a job. I mean, there's always reasons why people do things. It's not just like, oh, they just wanted to buy a pair of $300 gym shoes. You know, there's a whole bunch of things that go into decisions to harm somebody, but all of it is illness. And if we can address it as such, then we can respond differently. Instead of building up a prison business, we can really deal with the sickness in the society, the causes of the sickness, the root of the sickness, and then address the people who are responding to what's happening to them in a way that shows that they're not mentally or emotionally stable, but get them some help. And especially people who are on drugs, yes,
you
stress the pain of your mental illness, your emotional distress. So that's why you need the drugs. That's why you get hooked on the drugs. So why are we penalizing you for being in pain?
And I'm glad you brought that up because I was going to say the same thing. Most people, when they are addicts, alcohol or any drugs, they are self-medicating.
Yes.
They are self-medicating because there is an imbalance somewhere. Maybe it's physical trauma, maybe it's mental trauma, maybe, you know, whatever it is, but they are trying to stabilize themselves in some way to feel better, calm the nerves, calm the anxiety, calm the fears.
Yes.
And we criminalize addiction and we criminalize addicts instead of seeing it for what it is. It is part of the mental illness problem. And unless, of course, you're white, and then, of course, addiction is treated as an illness.
Right, right.
And that's the thing. But we have a whole lot of us folks who are sitting in jails over weed, and maybe they were selling it, maybe they were doing it, maybe they just had a bag of it. But the thing is that we are not talking about addiction in the way it is supposed to be treated. We use addiction as a moral failing instead of a mental illness.
Yeah.
And we need to stop. If you broke your leg, you wouldn't try to pray it away, and you would do whatever you needed to do to fix it. And we need to fix that. We can't smoke it away or snort it away or drink it away either. So we need to do the work. And we're strong people. I'm not saying we're not strong people, but we're to work. And we need to just change the narrative a little bit so that we can say, this is my sign of strength. I'm going to go talk to someone, and I'm going to ask for help. You know, and we need to get there. We need to encourage each other to get there.
Absolutely. There was a system in place that came out of that first mass shooting in Colorado, in Columbine. I remember the girl's name. Her name was Rachel. She was one of the first people that was shot. And they started this program in her name to try and reach out to students who were going through the feelings of having been bullied, wanting to get retribution. And it was a program. I had tried to get it instituted when I was on the local school council staff in Chicago. At my kids' high school. And it was one of those things where you started out with the students going through a session of the short seminar teaching where you listed the people that were cruel to you, what kind of things you can do to change the relationship with the people that you were having a hard time with. And over this session of these different short opportunities for kids to react, express their feelings, they found that they had changed the minds of a number of students who were either thinking of taking their own lives, taking other kids' lives, and it was a radical change to help these kids work through the mental gymnastics that lead to that downward spiral of mental illness. Because a lot of these things, they start in the mind, you know, as a man thinking, so is he. You start out with the kind of thinking that either lowers your strength or it's either going to build your strength. And if you are a person who's been treated wrongly, over time, that really does start to feed on you mentally. And in order to change your mind, in order to bring every thought captive, to take control, you have to first of all be trained to take control of the dead, awful thoughts that come into your mind, but also to be able to express those things in a professional setting where you can be told what is the right thing to do, what is the right thing to think, how to get yourself out of that mode where you are slowly destroying yourself. But that comes with being able to express your trauma to a professional and for those professionals to be made available to people. There's no shame in going to therapy. Therapy has helped a lot of people overcome obstacles that might have caused them to do badly.
And there are a lot more schools that need to have therapists available, counselors available. Right now, you have too many situations. I know here in Chicago, too many situations where you have a counselor that might come in every 2 weeks or something like that, or instead of being there on staff, when you have all time. So, and of course, they don't build a relationship with the students because they're not there often enough. You need to feel comfortable talking to somebody because these are very personal feelings. You don't just feel your guts of somebody that just because they say, oh, I'm a therapist. You know, adults don't do that. We can't expect children to have that level of trust of somebody they don't know.
Right. So you have to build a relationship.
You have to build a relationship. And that's one of the things that we should advocate for, that there be counselors on staff all the time, not just when some tragedy happens. Because there's always children who need to talk to somebody, and they need to build that relationship with the person who is there that has empathy and has the capacity to deal with the trauma that they're going through. And too often I've seen people who have the title, but in my opinion, in my observation, they didn't have the compassion, they didn't have the empathy. They were very clinical, but definitely, in my opinion, was not somebody that I would talk to, was less expect a young person to talk to. So I think there needs to be some evaluation even of the skills of people that we advocate our children talk to. And then, of course, when you're going through therapy, you want to find somebody that you feel trust, that you can trust, And, you know, and here in Illinois, there is some legislation that is about to be introduced that deals with mediation in situations where a child is bullied. They can demand mediation, and then you got to bring in the bully, bring the victim of bullying, and maybe even their parents. But it's a session to address the bullying and resolve it and have the two parties talk about it and talk about what's going on and bring it out in the open, as opposed to the adults just saying, oh, well, you know, children will be children, and just letting it happen. So there's a lot of ways we have to be proactive about when we see things happening that are traumatized. A lot of laws we can pass, and I don't know if there's a law that we can pass to say you got to get therapy if you've been through trauma. I don't know, but maybe that's something to think about. Maybe there's a way to legislate it so that it will be something required, especially if a person's got a high-stress job like, say, a police officer. You know, if you just went to the street until you get therapy.
Yes, but...
or the post office.
Well, I don't know if I'd want to necessarily see that legislated, but I want it to be made available more easily through insurance, Medicare for all y'all, and other avenues, so that it's not onerous as far as payment. Because if you have to think, okay, do I go to therapy or do I eat?
Right.
You ain't going to therapy. And that's the thing, is that we make, because so many things are so expensive for our community, we don't, it's not that we don't want to avail ourselves of it sometimes. Sometimes we just can't afford it.
And like you said, you know, people, you know, they go to their pastor. Okay, you know, there's a point where you need a person who understands how to counsel, and not everybody who is religious has a skill. That's a learned skill. But I would say maybe what churches can do is find out who in your congregation has those skills. They might have some people, have them in a position where they can't offer counseling. Get a real counselor. Don't just say, well, I'm going to go talk to my pastor, and then he can quote the Bible to you. And that's not helpful if they're not understanding how to deal with your pain. That's a training. That's a whole separate training that needs to be had. And religious people don't have that kind of training. I don't care what religion is. You have not had that training. You might have
And
marriage counseling.
Right.
That I saw on This Is Us. But don't think that, oh, you go to a therapist, things don't work out. Okay, therapy doesn't work. You need to find a therapist that is going to be appropriate and workable with you. I know that the lead, and This Is Us, I can't think of his name right now. Totally
Sterling K. Brown.
Yes. He, you know, he was going to a therapist and realized that she really could not identify with him in the way he needed to be identified, and he ended up going to a black male therapist who could totally relate to the kind of trauma that he experienced, the kind of fears that he experienced, and not downplay and really help him to open up and share those things.
Right.
Because he felt ashamed or embarrassed to share these things with his first therapist because he knew innately she would not be able to relate.
Right.
So it's all about being able to find someone who can relate to you, but also not be demeaning to you. There's nothing worse than going to somebody who has one of these attitudes that is completely unloving and not good.
And in that sense, also, like a lot of times, you know, we three are religious in our own way, and prayer is great, but it's the beginning of a conversation. You need to have a conversation with God. And if you go to a pastor and he says, well, we'll pray about this, well, yeah, that's wonderful. And now what do I do? Because that's the beginning. That can't be the end all and be all. There has to be more to it. And if you're like me, a United Methodist, where they change pastors every 3 years or less, you know, you don't even build up that camaraderie or that relationship where you feel, you know, comfortable going to somebody because you either you just met them or they're on their way out the door. So we need to advocate for each other.
Absolutely.
We need to advocate for each other and say it's okay to be scared, to be traumatized, to be anxious, you know, and to need help.
Right, and urge our friends to get help, and don't shame anyone who feels like they need to go and talk to a professional because that's why they're there. So, well, we've got to go, and we thank you all for being with us. Make sure you contact us on Twitter or Instagram and our blog. And we look forward to talking to you next time. I'm Naima.
I'm Cheryl.
I'm Barbara. Risk-free black mom.
Bye.
Bye.
To the end of our show today, but you can hear every show in the archives at www.blogtalkradio.com/the-female-solution. You can also hear today's show on the Female Solution Facebook page. Go to www.facebook.com/the-female-solution. Leave your comments about today's show. You can always reach me on my website at www.naimalatif.com. That's www.naimalatif.com. Watch our TV shows, listen to our radio shows, order our books, and be sure to get your copy of the book, The Female Solution. On behalf of our team of radio hosts, I'd like to thank all of you who participated in today's discussion. And to our global family listening from all around the world, we say thank you. To our family in China, xiexie. India, zanyaba. Japan, arigato. Korea, kamsahamnida. Russia, spasiba. Germany, danke. Poland, dziękuję. France, merci. Spain, gracias. Italy, grazie. Egypt, shukran. Ghana, medasi. Nigeria, eshe. South Africa, ngiyabonga. Senegal, jeret. Kenya, asante. Israel, toda. Pakistan, shukriya. Afghanistan, Tashakur. Saudi Arabia, shukran. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuhu. Thank you. And may peace be upon you and the mercy of God and God's blessing.